Hello, everyone, and welcome to Using Data and Information Systems in Partnered Research, a cyber seminar series hosted by VIREC, the VA Information Resource Center. Thank you to CIDR for providing promotional and technical support. This series focuses on VA data use in both quality improvement and operations research partnerships. This includes query projects and partnered evaluation initiatives. You can find more information about this series and other VIREC cyber seminars on VIREC's website, and you can catch up on previous sessions on HSR's VIREC cyber seminar archive. A quick reminder for those of you just joining us, the slides are available for download. This is a screenshot of the sample email you should have received today before the session. In it, you'll find the link to download the slides. Before I hand things over to the presenters, let's start our session with some poll questions to help us to get to know you better. The first poll question is, what is your primary role in using VA data? Investigator, PI, COI, statistician, methodologist, biostatistician, data manager, analyst, or programmer, project coordinator, or other, and please describe via the chat function. Our second poll question is, how many years of experience do you have working with VA data? None, I'm brand new to this, 1 year or less, more than one, less than three, at least three, less than seven, at least seven, less than 10, or 10 years or more.
Thank you so much, Amanda. The poll is open and running. It should have populated right on the right-hand side of your WebEx window. Please, if you cannot see the second poll, just scroll down within that panel, and please remember to click submit once you've selected both of your answer choices. I see that the poll has somewhat slowed down, so I will go ahead and close out the poll in just a few seconds. Okay, I will be closing the polls and share the results. For what is your primary role? We have 16% said A, investigator, PI, COI, 9% said B, statistician, methodologist, biostatistician. 20% say C, data manager, analyst, or programmer. 11% said D, project coordinator, and then 11% said E, other. And some of those others I see are medical student and librarian research support. Thank you, everyone. Back to you, Amanda.
Thank you. And we have two last poll questions. What is your experience with conducting evaluations? No experience, some experience, or extensive experience? And our last poll question, how would you rate your overall knowledge of military toxin exposure legislation? No knowledge, some knowledge, or extensive knowledge?
Thank you, Amanda. Once again, that poll should have opened up on the right-hand side of your WebEx window. Please remember to hit submit once you've selected both of your answer choices. I'll be closing out the polls in just a few seconds. Great, so I'm going to go ahead and close out this poll and share the results. For what is your experience with conducting evaluations, we have 33% said A, no experience, 52% said B, some experience, and 11% said C, extensive experience. For how would you rate your overall knowledge of military toxin exposure legislation, we have 31% said A, no knowledge, 57% said B, some knowledge, and lastly, 11% said C, extensive knowledge. Thank you, everyone. Back to you, Amanda.
Thank you, Whitney. And thank you so much for the audience and participating in those polls. It really helps us to learn more about you. And now for today's presentation, which is titled Evaluating National Policy Military Environmental Toxin Legislation, presented by Fran Weaver, Rena Steger, Chadwick, Kelsey Berman, and Chad Osteen. Dr. Fran Weaver is a senior research career scientist at the HSR Center for Innovation for Complex Chronic Healthcare, or CINCH, and professor of public health at Loyola University Chicago. She is the principal investigator of the evaluation of the impact of military toxin-related legislation and multiple PI of the Evidence to Practice Evaluation Center for Veterans, or EPICVET. Rena Steger-Chadwick, MPH, is a research health science specialist at CINCH. Drawing on her background in epidemiology and survey method design, she helps lead the survey components of the Evidence to Practice Evaluation Center for Veterans, EPICVET, evaluations. Kelsey Berryman, MA, is a research health scientist for CINCH research team since 2022. She collaborates on EPICVET investigating the impact of military toxin legislation and evaluation of VHA's vocational rehab, rehabilitation, and environmental programs. Dr. Chad Osteen is a social science analyst and has been part of CINCH research team since 2017. He has served as the project manager for EPICVET since 2023. Within the center, he assists in projects assessing the impact of military toxin legislation on veterans' healthcare and the VA's vocational rehabilitation and employment programs. And joining as a panelist is Pooja Solanki, who serves as a research health science specialist at CINCH. She has her master's in public health with a concentration in epidemiology. Pooja has 8 years of experience in VA research initiatives spanning several areas that aim to improve healthcare delivery and outcomes in veterans. She is a project manager of the EPICVET assisting the military toxin exposure, toxin legislation on veterans healthcare evaluation. And to start it off, I will hand it over to Dr. Weaver. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Amanda. And thank you all for joining us today. To give you a little bit of background about how these evidence-based practice centers came about, I point you to a 2018 legislation, the Foundations for Evidence-Based Policymaking, which is requiring all agencies within the federal government to provide a systematic plan for how they are addressing policy questions relevant to their programs, policies, and regulations of their agencies. These evaluations are used to determine if these policies and programs are evidence-based, are doing what they were intended to do, and that the resource allocations or costs are appropriate. As you can imagine, these evaluations will influence agency budgets, and the evaluations are made public. So we are one of six evidence-based policy centers funded by QUERY to assist the VA in meeting the requirements of the Evidence Act. Our center is called the Evidence to Practice Evaluation Center for Veterans, or EPICVET, which I co-lead with Dr. Kevin Stroop out of the COIN in Chicago. We currently have two national evaluations, one assessing the value of vocational rehabilitation and employment programs, and the second looking at the impact of the military toxin legislation on veterans' health care. We collaborate with investigators at Madison, Tampa, and Tuscaloosa VAs. Today, we're going to focus on the military environmental toxin exposures legislation. As you can imagine, over time, our servicemen and women have been exposed to a variety of toxins, both on our own soil as well as when they have been deployed across different areas of the world. The largest local toxin exposures occurred at Marine Base Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Between 1953 and 1957, the groundwater at the camp had been contaminated with a number of toxicants, including trichloroethylene, perchloroethylene, vinyl chloride, and benzene. And this was due to a combination of poor disposal practices and contamination from local industry. It's been estimated that at least 1 million veterans, family members, and civilian workers have been exposed to these toxins. You probably have heard, because it's been on the news a lot, that another major area of exposure has been with airborne toxins and the use of open burn pits to get rid of trash and other items during the Afghan and Gulf Wars. Also, a big concern over the years has been pesticides and herbicides, particularly Agent Orange, linked to Vietnam and other locations. And then in addition to the airborne problems from Gulf War, there were other toxin exposures that individuals who were in Iraq and surrounding areas experienced as part of their military service. The Camp Lejeune legislation, there are actually three different components of this. I will point out that while the wells were closed in Camp Lejeune in 1987, it took 25 years for the government to act on the fact that a number of veterans and family members were getting sick from exposure to the toxins. In 2012, the Honoring Veterans and Caring for Camp Lejeune Family Act was passed, identifying 15 conditions that were associated with the exposure to these toxins. Veterans with these conditions could receive free care from the VA for those conditions, and family members who were at Camp Lejeune and having experienced any of these same conditions could apply for reimbursement of out-of-pocket healthcare costs to the VA. In 2017, VA identified 8 presumptive conditions as being directly associated with the toxin exposure, including several cancers, aplastic anemia, and Parkinson's disease. A presumptive condition means that a condition is as likely or not to have caused the problem. So veterans do not have to make a case that if they have kidney cancer, that the toxins were not related. That already exists. And then most recently, the Camp Lejeune Justice Act in 2022 allowed individuals from Camp Lejeune with any related healthcare concerns to apply for a one-time payment as a result of harm caused by the exposures. This was limited to a 2-year window to apply. That window recently closed. The PACT Act came out in 2022, and it was the largest piece of legislation ever to address exposures to servicemen and women as a result of their military experience. It expanded health care and benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and airborne hazards. There were additional conditions identified for Agent Orange and other toxic substances. It identified 23 presumptive conditions that were associated with the burn pits and airborne hazards, including a number of respiratory conditions and respiratory-related cancers. It has been estimated that at least 3.5 million veterans have been affected from these airborne toxins. The other thing the PACT Act did was to include a requirement to screen all veterans for exposure concerns every 5 years. That has taken place in the last 2 years, and the VA has done a really good job of screening a large number of veterans regarding their exposure concerns. So to tackle this type of evaluation, we really needed to take a multi-pronged or mixed methods approach to understand how the legislation impacted veterans who had been exposed. We're going to talk primarily about what we did with the Camp Lejeune cohort, but many of these methods will be applied to the PACT Act as well, which we will be starting later in the fall. We undertook a survey of a sample of veterans who were exposed to the contaminated water. We conducted a telephone interview with a sample of Camp Lejeune veterans. We examined healthcare utilization for Camp Lejeune veterans and a comparison group, and we've been looking at unintended consequences of policies. So anytime a policy comes out, there's a change. Change results in consequences. Some were intended, some were unexpected, some may have been negative. So we've been tracking that. And one way we're doing that is taking advantage of social media. So today you will be hearing from the rest of the team on how we approached each of these. I will turn the slides over now to Rena.
Thank you, Fran. Hello, everyone. My name is Rena Steiker-Chadwick, and I'm going to be speaking about our survey of Camp Lejeune veterans exposed to contaminated water. The purpose of this survey was to learn about these veterans' experiences in seeking compensation in VA healthcare for presumptive and associated conditions as outlined in the 2012 Honoring Veterans and Caring for Camp Lejeune Families Act and the 2017 Federal Register that Fran described in her presentation. Due to the very specific subject matter of our survey, we developed it using a Delphi panel method. Our Delphi panel consisted of 14 members, including 4 veterans who spent time at Camp Lejeune during the period of contamination, 9 researcher and clinician subject matter experts, and 1 veterans service officer. The first step of the process was to conduct a kickoff meeting with our panel where the purpose of the survey was presented and the panel was asked for their input about the most important topics to be covered by the survey. The compiled list of topics from the kickoff meeting were put into a Qualtrics survey. Panel members were then asked to vote on all topics that they felt should be included. Space was also provided to comment on any topics they felt were missing. We then used the results of the topic voting to draft an initial version of the survey. Where possible, we adapted questions from existing surveys. Multiple demographic items were adapted from the Census Bureau and the VA Survey of Healthcare Experiences of Patients, and some veteran experience questions were adapted with permission from the Veteran Experience Office. The survey then underwent 2 rounds of review by the Delphi panel. Each round, every panel member was provided the most recent survey draft via email or postal mail, and were encouraged to consider clarity, missing information, sensitivity of topics, and the accuracy of terminology used. Some key design elements of the final draft of the survey included being completely anonymous based on veteran feedback, having a raffle for a $20 CVS gift card where every 1 in 10 completed surveys win, being offered in 2 modes, both a web-based Qualtrics survey as well as a paper version for accessibility. Because there is no comprehensive registry of Camp Lejeune veterans exposed to contaminated water, we included multiple sources in our sampling strategy. First, we received data on the cohort of veterans at Camp Lejeune between 1975 and 1985 from the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, or ATSDR. Data for this cohort were linked to CDW and VetsNet, and a 10% random sample was taken of those with contact information available. We also oversampled for women and non-white and Hispanic veterans. In an attempt to get representation from those at Camp Lejeune before 1975 and those not engaged with the VA, we used a snowball sampling strategy where an invitation to the survey was extended to 2 large private Camp Lejeune Facebook groups with permission of the group administrators. Prior to inviting the full random sample of veterans from the ATSDR cohort to participate in the survey, we conducted a pretest to evaluate how much time the survey took to complete, how the survey flowed, how complete the data were, and if veterans had any feedback about the survey. Initially, we invited 10 veterans to complete the web survey and 10 to complete the paper survey. But after only receiving 3 responses, we extended an invitation to take the web survey to an additional 100 veterans. No concerns arose from the survey data itself, so we concluded the survey was ready to be fielded. From the initial 8,920 veterans randomly sampled from the AT-SDR cohort, 56 were excluded from the first survey invitation. Reasons for exclusion included an international address, homelessness, incarceration, or an incomplete or unknown address. The first invitation was sent via postal mail and provided veterans with 3 options for response: accessing the Qualtrics survey via a shortened and easy to type URL, accessing the Qualtrics survey via a QR code, and calling the research team to request a paper copy of the survey. This mailing also included a magnet and a resource sheet containing links to Camp Lejeune resources such as VHA and ATSDR websites. Due to resource constraints, a second invitation to complete the survey was extended via email 2 months after the mailed invitation. In total, 5,797 veterans with an email address were invited. In total, 1,074 veterans completed the survey, with 48 of those indicating that they heard about the survey on social media, representing a 12.3% response rate from the ATSDR cohort. 1,007 veterans completed the survey using Qualtrics, and 67 returned a completed paper copy. Of those that completed the survey via Qualtrics, 38% accessed it using the QR code. Only 61% of those eligible to enter the raffle online chose to do so. Preliminary findings from the survey have revealed 31.3% reported associated conditions, with 86.2% of these having needed care after passage of legislation. Of those that needed care, 65.1% received care at a VA hospital or clinic. 9.8% reported presumptive conditions, and of these, 33.7% were approved for service-connected disability, 15.3% were denied, 21.4% were waiting on a decision, and 25.5% did not file. The most common reason for not filing a claim was not knowing how. We also received a large amount of rich comments in an open-ended text box that we made available at the end of the survey, and performed qualitative coding of themes that arose. The most common themes included frustration with VA and government response and confusion about benefits processes. Our survey was limited to self-report as well as anonymous, meaning that the prevalence of conditions and claim outcomes could not be validated. Additionally, due to receiving only 48 completed surveys using our snowball sampling technique, the vast majority of veterans that completed our survey were engaged with VA, which could impact the perceptions of VA care and claims processes. We also experienced several barriers throughout data collection. We heard anecdotally on numerous occasions that, based on the controversy surrounding the contamination, the group of veterans we intended to survey are very distrustful of government, and we believe this led to low engagement with our survey. Additionally, it is likely that our survey was completed by those who are healthier, resulting in small sample sizes of those eligible to benefit from the legislation of interest. Finally, we found from survey results, as well as hearing from respondents anecdotally throughout data collection, that there is a great deal of confusion around the legislation itself. And now I will pass it on to Kelsey.
Perfect. Thank you, Rena. Hi, everybody. My name is Kelsey Berryman, and I'm going to be talking today about our telephone interviews with a sample of these Camp Lejeune veterans. So the purpose of these qualitative interviews was to look at what extent toxic substances during their military service while stationed at Camp Lejeune has harmed these veterans, and the impact of legislation on veterans and their ability to access care. So for our recruitment for this study, we originally proposed about 25 to 40 interviews was our goal, depending on the number of volunteers and how quickly we could reach saturation of responses. And we also attempted to recruit a variety of participants, including women and minorities in this group as well. And so how we got our sample was, so from the original survey, at the end of it, we asked participants if they would be interested in talking with us more about their experiences in more depth. And so 24 veterans expressed interest from that initial survey that Rena talked about and provided contact information. And we were able to then get a hold of and complete 15 interviews from that. We then made additional efforts to recruit more as we were only at 15 individuals at that point in time. And so we recruited individuals from 2 private Facebook groups for Camp Lejeune veterans and their family members. And so we were able to get 20 individuals who expressed interest. And from there, we eventually were able to get 7 who agreed, and we were able to be reached and who completed the interview. And so after these efforts, we ended up with 22 participants. And when we went through the transcripts, we felt like we had reached saturation at that point, so we concluded recruitment. So for our interview guide development, so for the interviews, we asked participants to provide more detail regarding their experience with potential exposure, their and their family's health, and their use of VA healthcare and disability services. And a lot of how this interview guide was developed was from the survey results that Rena had been talking about. So we looked at areas that there were patterns of responding and also gaps that we wanted to know more about in more depth and more nuances. And so that's a big reason why we decided to do the qualitative work, and also how we set up our interview guide. We also performed 2 cognitive interviews with veterans to test out the interview. And then we made it some small changes based on how those went to then have our final interview guide. So we conducted these interviews using Microsoft Teams between February and May of this past year. And these interviews were audio recorded and transcribed verbatim by the Salt Lake City Centralized Transcription Center. And this used a semi-structured interview. And the reason why we chose to do this was that it allowed us to ask the questions that we had intended to, but also to follow up with necessary clarifying questions, as well as if we felt like we needed to ask additional follow-up questions, we were able to do that. And we used Braun and Clark's thematic analysis in order to code and analyze these responses. So for the results for this study, so we are still currently conducting the thematic analysis. So these are some of our preliminary findings from that. And so I wanted to talk about just a few themes that we're seeing emerging. So one is about the claims process. A lot of veterans talked about how lengthy the claims process was and the lack of explanation that they had received for decisions. And a lot of time this lack of explanation had to do with the denial of claim. They felt like they weren't given a lot of explanation in terms of why they were denied, so that perhaps if they wanted to try to resubmit, it wasn't clear of what they should be changing, for instance. As you can see in the quote below, this individual talked about how it's been going on for 11 months that they've been waiting for a claim. They still haven't heard back. Another theme that individuals talked about was how whether they process these claims alone or help with others. So some individuals did it all on their own, whereas others used the help of perhaps like a VSO officer. Another theme that we see emerging here is barriers to submitting these claims. So one major barrier that individuals talked about was the difficulty or inability to obtain medical records. And so this refers to military records, it refers to VA medical records, and to outside providers as well. And the quote that I provided below, you can see, is this is a situation that a number of veterans talked about. So there was a major fire where records were held for both veterans and their family members during their military time. And due to that, a lot of records were lost. And so a huge issue with submitting claims is that you need to have evidence to prove the reason why you can submit claim and why you should be receiving compensation for your care. And so if you can't prove that, that's very difficult then. A second barrier that individuals talked about was the inability to access VA due to income. So a past policy in the VA was that if you had a certain level of income, you were not able to use VA services. And so individuals talked about how for a long time they thought that that was still the case, and so they didn't know they could even access VA care, let alone, you know, submit a claim and get their care paid for, because they had never accessed VA. And so that was something interesting that we found when talking to veterans. And lastly, the other theme I wanted to talk about, and Rena had talked about too, in the quantitative results. So individuals talked about how the water contamination had impacted their trust or ability to trust on not only in the government, as she had talked about too, but also in the military and in VA as well. So individuals talked about both how it hasn't impacted their trust. So like the last quote I provided here, this individual talked about how the VA had provided them very good care and that they do trust them a lot. Others had mixed experiences. And we also see that here when we're talking about their ability to trust the military and government. Individuals talked about how for, you know, only serving, for example, like the first quote, 4 years, they're still suffering 40 years later. And this sense of betrayal that they are experiencing was definitely a theme we see throughout the interviews. So overall, from these qualitative interviews, we see that this type of methodology is really important, and in terms of a source of data and understanding this the military toxin exposure, as well as how legislation has impacted veterans' access to care, and that this methodology is also very important when a topic isn't well researched or hasn't been the opinions of the individuals who are being researched about aren't well known, which is the case for this. We also see thematic analysis can give meaning to these interviews and help understanding what's happening in the data and disseminate findings. So with that, I am going to turn it over to my colleague, Chad.
Thank you so much, Kelsey. Everyone, my name is Dr. Chad Osteen, and I'm going to be starting to go over some administrative data and some overview of how we got this data. So to begin, how we kind of identified our cohort for the administrative data is we grabbed this from the ATSDR data set from the CDW, and we got an initial cohort from Camp Lejeune and Camp Pendleton of a cumulative 340,000. We then removed all veterans that were not found within the corporate data warehouse, and this left us with a combined cohort of 187,000. We then removed and excluded all veterans that had no history of VA utilization, and this left us with a final cohort of just under 160,000. And I do want to quickly highlight here that our Camp Lejeune cohort is a little bit larger, of around 86,000, than our Camp Pendleton comparison group of 73,000. And that will come to play here as we try to look at what is the proportion of veterans with the identified presumptive and associated conditions within this data set. And to just kind of orientate you towards this figure here, On this x-axis here, you're going to see all listed and identified associated conditions, with the green being Camp Lejeune and the blue being Camp Pendleton. And on the y-axis here, we've seen the percent of the sample that has been diagnosed with this condition in percent. So at the top here, we're seeing about 0.5% at 0.5%. And we see that there is a pretty noticeable difference between Camp Pendleton having a higher proportion of veterans with esophageal cancer than those at Camp Lejeune. And we see that Camp Lejeune has a higher proportion of veterans with hepatic steatosis compared to Camp Pendleton. Other differences here we see are fairly manageable, and also there being fairly low amounts of breast cancer, scleroderma, and abortion here. Moving on then to the presumptive conditions, same thing here. We're going to see now the presumptive conditions on our x-axis here. And we see that there is generally higher levels of bladder, kidney, and liver cancer, with Camp Lejeune having higher amounts of bladder cancer and somewhat higher levels of kidney cancer compared to Camp Pendleton. And then Camp Pendleton having noticeably higher levels of liver cancer compared to Camp Lejeune. We see then that their remaining amounts proportions here are fairly low for the remaining presumptive conditions. I now want to move on and discuss the social media analysis that we conducted within this military environmental exposure legislation. So as we've discussed previously, we find evidence that this cohort of veterans affected at Camp Lejeune have a distrust of the government and, in effect, some distrust of the VA at large here. This was highlighted additionally by the fact that we usually expect a response rate between 20% to 30%, and we got a response rate of around 12%. So the point of then looking into social media was to investigate unintended consequences of legislation associated with Camp Lejeune contamination, now using social media. And social media does offer a unique opportunity to gain insight into legislation and to this specific sample of veterans that may not feel comfortable responding to a survey. We know that already 3.6 million people use some form of social media daily, and we already had some success in our other qualitative works recruiting from Facebook. Now, one of the issues with recruiting and using Facebook and Instagram data in general is that it already has linking personally identifiable information. This can be names, photos, et cetera. This adds additional barriers to try to access this, and also safety concerns. However, other social media sites are already publicly posted and often de-identified. Best examples of this being Reddit and X, formerly Twitter. For this reason, we decided to go with Reddit, as all information is already de-identified or largely de-identified and publicly posted, and users self-select into communities of interest. Now, these communities are often referred to as subreddits. Now, the communities that we were broadly interested in for this type of qualitative analysis into unintended consequences were r/veterans, veterans benefits, United States Marine Corps and the military. And then we also opened this up to a little bit of broader communities that might be discussing Camp Lejeune and the military-related exposure legislation, including North Carolina, the types of commercials that people are viewing, Justice Serve, and broader news. Now, as is the case with these thematic investigations and with qualitative interviews in general, they can provide a lot of context and rich data when the either problem or cohort in general is not well defined. In this case, we did not have a well-defined understanding of what was happening for unintended consequences with this cohort of veterans and how this legislation might be affecting veterans more broadly. So we had the approach of thickening data that's been used by other researchers that have done qualitative work on social media. And we decided to look at original posts and comments that included some relevance to discussions of Camp Lejeune and the related legislation. It had to have at least one upvote, and we were looking at the top 5 relevant comments, as this made it a little bit more manageable, but also at this point started to get away from interesting and relevant content past 5. Each one of these posts and comments was treated as a unique piece of data and referred to as a data trace. These codes were identified and then brought to the rest of the research team of three members. And then we, through an iterative process, looked at emergent themes that we found through these different posts. For Camp Lejeune-related legislation, we used the exact wording of this legislation, including, you know, Camp Lejeune Family Act and the Justice Act, but also keywords that are related here: Camp Lejeune, military toxins, Family Act, and combinations therein. And we wanted to make sure that all posts were from 2012 or more recent, as the oldest piece of legislation related to Camp Lejeune was passed in 2012. We then wanted to look at the PACT Act, and we used the full wording of this piece of legislation and then surrounding key terms once again. This time, though, we wanted to make sure that all posts were from 2022 or more recent, as the PACT Act was passed in 2022. What we ended up finding from this was 370 data traces, including 38 original posts and 332 associated comments from our search of Camp Lejeune on Reddit. And from the PACT Act, we found 337 data traces collected, including 34 original posts and 303 associated comments. Now, below both of these, you're going to see there was about 23% of these comments were identified as irrelevant, and then a varying degree of irrelevant comments. Now, what we mean by this is that reaction comments were something that were essentially agreeing with the post and not adding anything substantial. So, wow, yes, I agree, same, things like this. Irrelevant were jokes or otherwise unrelated comments that weren't adding anything to the ongoing discussion of the post. From this, we identified this full list of themes, and you'll notice a few things that are similar that's been discussed previously, especially with unintended consequences and our open-ended responses, looking at distrust to the government, discussions of the media, who veterans and loved ones are blaming, the provider experience when veterans go to talk about others, etc. But I really want to highlight the top three here, this being personal experience, resource sharing, and legal advice. Personal experience being the person's prior experience from exposure or giving their experience and what's been happening. Resource sharing is the sharing of links to news sources, lawyer sites, or other sources with general information. This can include scientific publications. And finally, legal advice, giving advice and ideas to take action in terms of the legal context. This is targeted at something a little more specific, such as filing a claim. And highlighting these a little bit more with exact quotes from this experience. On the left, you're going to see in blue Camp Lejeune, and on the right, you're going to see the PACT Act in green. And the Camp Lejeune quote here from personal experience: I was there in 86. I drank water from those nasty old sinks, water buffaloes and hoses. I'm a ticking time bomb waiting for one of many cancers to crop up. Water was tainted with chemicals and fuel for over 30 years. Thank you, U.S. government, for not testing the water or hiding the results. And for the PACT Act, we see a frustrated veteran discussing their experience also with problematic water, but also how it affected their spouse, how she drank the water, and it caused their mouth to bleed. As far as resource sharing, I want to highlight before discussing this any further, is that these are still comments on the internet from individuals. So we're going to take them as someone's opinion and not necessarily fact. We need to be fact-checked as well. But from the veteran's perspective at Camp Lejeune, we still see fear of drinking the water, never drink the water on base. The toxicity levels are still dangerous. They state even Camp Pendleton's water is unsafe to drink. And they share a Military Times news link to back up their source. For the PACT Act, we see something where a veteran is strictly sharing resources in terms of here's the VA webpage for how to address the PACT Act and how to make sure people can get on the burn pit registry if they so choose. And finally, for legal advice, we see on the left here at Camp Lejeune a claim the VA should be filed and consulted with a lawyer taking Camp Lejeune cases. Prostate cancer may not be a presumptive condition at the moment, so you will need the documentation, the claim to prove nexus, but that can be done. And on the right-hand side, we see an individual who claims to be a reviewer or a rater of some of these claims, discussing exactly what types of conditions might be covered and what might not be. For example, sinusitis, rhinitis, and asthma are based in a previous claim, based on a certain year here, but is not necessarily covered in the PACT Act, and that you will have to prove your connections. So in conclusion here, I want to highlight three key takeaways. The first is that veterans and those they care about, loved ones, are using social media to share their experiences with others and seeking out advice, specifically such as how to file a claim and are they even able to take advantage of the PACT Act. Second, we see that the emergent themes, both from this analysis and from previous unintended consequences and open-ended responses, are having some type of convergent validity here, showing similar frustrations and similar sources of information seeking. Now, with this basis that we have, we can now build a larger framework for larger scale qualitative research, such as those involving machine learning, like natural language processing or natural language processing. And with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Fran.
Thanks, everyone. As you can see, we have lots and lots of data, and we could only give you a snapshot of what we found so far. So, for example, the administrative data, we barely scratched the surface in what we have that we've been working on. But what I'd like to do now, if it's okay, is to take any questions that the audience might have.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to submit your questions to the presenters, please do so in the Q&A function, which can be accessed from the bottom right corner of your screen. And so this project has several different data collection methodologies. How did you decide when to use surveys versus interviews or analyzing existing data like administrative or social media posts?
It was dependent on our research, or I should say evaluation aims, and our different evaluation aims lended themselves better to one type of data collection than another. For example, patient experiences, that is not something that you can typically get out of an electronic medical record. So surveying those individuals and conducting interviews with them was the best way to be able to do that. Our foray into social media was partially a desire to test out some new methodologies to see what we could learn. And because the military toxin exposure has been such a hot button topic for many years, we thought it would be very interesting to see what we could find with social media.
Great, thank you. Do you have a handle on what the differences are between those engaged with VA care and those that are not in a group where all are probably eligible?
Unfortunately, we do not. There is not an easy way to identify individuals that were at Camp Lejeune between 1953 and 1987 because that wasn't even a deployment category. That is, where were they for training? So we took advantage of the ATSDR database for the 10 years that they collected information on individuals who were there. We suspect that those that we can't reach because they did not engage with the VA may either be those that have private insurance and are utilizing that for their health care, or those who have had either a bad experience or are extremely distrustful of the VA and would not be utilizing the care. So it's hard to know. And that definitely is a limitation of this project.
Thank you. The next question, I love the use of Reddit as a method to get information that may not be picked up in interviews or surveys. How was the team able to access Reddit? It's my understanding it is blocked on VA computers. What were the ethical considerations about using Reddit?
Chad, you want to take that?
Sure thing. So I want to answer actually the second part of the verse as far as the ethics go here. And while there are many ethical barriers, especially using ones that has more personally identifiable information like Facebook and Instagram, it's a little bit easier using Reddit because it's de-identified. And we, first of all, did not find any veterans that were posting more identifiable information or identifying themselves with this. And so we did refer to what was the precedent for this as far as do we have to go to the IRB. We consulted our own IRB to see if any additional action needed to be taken, and found that because it was de-identified and we can use this kind of under the existing IRB, that it was all right. But as far as getting access to Reddit, we did actually kind of scrape this through separate computers and online servers, and then send this data through it to the VA. So it was a kind of a few two-step process to get that data, made it a little bit tricky with that firewall. We kind of collected that data separately.
Thank you. Based on your interviews, experience, and literature covered, what have you found and or think about the relation to exposure to these toxins and any indicators of poor health, such as physical frailty or disability, or acute care utilizations, such as more emergency room visits, ICU stays, and hospital admissions?
So we are just really digging into the utilization data right now, so I don't have an answer for you. We will know a whole lot more in a few more months. It has taken us a while to create those analytic data files. And because we are using both the VA data and the Veterans Benefits data and trying to put those together, it has things don't match up, as you can imagine. So we are trying, we are still working on sort of cleaning some of that up. We should know more in a few more months, but, you know, stay tuned. And hopefully we'll be able to present at a meeting or another seminar.
I think that pretty much answers our next question, which is where can people go to view additional findings as you find more out?
Well, of course, we're going to be publishing our findings in different journals, presenting at different meetings, and also making available more public-facing documents such as, why am I blocking now, infographics and other types of documents that provide quick, easy facts based on our findings. So, as I said, you know, we are just, you know, getting to the point now that we have results to share. So that's part of the reason why we didn't go into as much detail on the findings as we could have. We really wanted to showcase how we took a multi-method approach to trying to identify the impact of legislation on veterans' access to care and disability.
Great, thank you. Well, it looks like those are all of our Q&A questions. Oh, wait, we have one more that just popped up. What advice do you have, if any, for policymakers and care providers regarding how to make sure veterans who don't use VA know what types of care or benefits they may be entitled to? Any thoughts on how you might evaluate such efforts?
Is that on the chat? I sort of lost the middle of that question.
Oh, sorry. Yes, it's the last one in the chat. I can read it again. What advice do you have, if any, for policymakers and care providers regarding how to make sure veterans who don't use VA know what types of care or benefits they might be entitled to? Any thoughts on how you might evaluate such efforts?
The VA has spent a lot of time disseminating information about this legislation out to the community at everything from state fairs to various local gatherings, VSOs, lots of different local opportunities. So I think that is the way that VA is trying to get to those individuals who are not already engaged with the system. How successful they have been is difficult to know unless someone were to keep track of who they interacted with at those different meetings or events to find out, you know, who then maybe chose to enroll in the VA. It's a very interesting question and a little bit outside of our, you know, what is part of our purview in this evaluation, but a great idea.
And how was the veteran service organization chosen that was part of the panel? Was it offered to all or a specific organization?
It was a veteran service officer that we were referred to by one of our Camp Lejeune members. They knew this individual. This individual had been very active on social media, Facebook, and other sites, sharing information with veterans about the legislation and what, you know, what the benefits were. So she seemed like a really great person, and she was. She had lots of great input into our Delphi panel.
Okay, I think that is now our final last Q&A question. Do the presenters have any final remarks?
Just thank you for your time today. We appreciate the comments that we got back. It'll make us think some more about how we're doing some of the work that we're doing. This is a very important question, and we haven't even really scratched the surface on the PACT Act yet. So maybe in 2 years, we could come back and tell you what we've learned about the PACT Act. So thank you all.
Great, thank you. And Fran, if you can go to the next slide. I want to thank our presenters for a very informative session and taking the time to present today's session. To the audience, if you have any other questions for presenters, you can contact them directly. Thank you once again for attending. Once you leave this session, an evaluation will open in your browser. We're finishing just a couple minutes before the hour, so if you could take a minute to provide your feedback and let us know if there are any data topics you're interested in, we'd really appreciate it. Your suggestions are very important for planning future sessions, so we appreciate your time in completing the survey. Thank you once again for attending, and have a wonderful rest of your day.